Thank you for listening to the podcast of the Richmond, Kentucky First United Methodist Church, growing disciples who make a difference.
As part of my study of architecture, one summer I traveled to Europe to see some of the great architectural monuments there. As a group, we spent most of our time in Italy, around Rome and Venice and so on. But every now and then we would have a day off from the scheduled curriculum, and we could go see things that we had heard about maybe and wanted to see. And my friend and I got on a train to travel to Cologne. Cologne in Germany has one of the largest and grandest of the Gothic cathedrals, which was a particular interest of mine at the time. And I really wanted to see that one. We didn't have much time, but we calculated we had enough time to get to Cologne, get off the train, find the cathedral, maybe spend an hour there, get back to the train, and be back in time for our work the next day. So off we went. Everything went on time. We got to the train station. We knew we didn't have any time to spare. So we started trying to ask directions. How do I get to the cathedral? How do I get to the cathedral? How do I get to the cathedral? My high school German did not suffice. I don't know if I ever knew the word for cathedral in German or what, but anyway, we were trying to ask, and people were you know, nodding and smiling very nicely. Finally, we found somebody who spoke English, and we said, "How do we get to the cathedral?" And he started laughing. I thought, well, that's rude. You know, I know we're clearly tourists, but... And then he turned around and he pointed. The train station in Cologne has an entire wall of windows. And literally, I am guessing 50 feet outside this wall of windows, you see the base of one of the giant flying buttresses of the cathedral in Cologne. You literally could not see anything else in that window except for the foundations of the cathedral. Now, I felt pretty stupid, but that wasn't my first time, and it wasn't my last time, of looking right at something and not seeing it. Gentlemen, have you ever been unable to find a spoon in the kitchen drawer only to have your wife come up? What are you laughing about? I'm not even done yet, right? Or you know, your jacket is hanging in the closet and you can't find it. Or how many of you have ever lost your reading glasses right here? Anybody? But okay, only me. All right. We have this capacity to miss the obvious, to not see the things that are right in front of us. And so the story that David just read for us has more than one miracle in it. And I think the first one is that the disciples saw something, because we can be blind to these sorts of things. They saw a need. These are people who have been following Jesus now for some time, and he has begun the work of trying to groom in them what it means to be a disciple. And presumably, when this sort of thing had happened just a few chapters ago and the crowd had gathered, they didn't see the need, but this time they did. They looked at Jesus and said, "These people are going to get hungry. Someone needs to feed them." They saw a need. I remember we were doing a Bible study in one of my churches, not in this community, but another community, and we got to talking about how God calls his people to reach out to the poor. And one of the elder saints of the church raised his hand, and he says, "Where should we go?" I said, "Well, it doesn't matter where you go. You know, the poor are poor in our town." And he said, "But we don't have any poor people in our town." And I was flabbergasted because this was not, you know, that wasn't a political statement for him. He wasn't trying to say anything about the welfare state. He literally moved about through that community on a regular basis, up and down Main Street in that community, and never saw them. And I knew they were there. You don't even know where I'm talking about. And you know they're there, don't you? Because they're always there. And yet sometimes we don't see them. I went to a district meeting. There was a church property that had fallen into disuse. Or a nice big church in a downtown county seat. Only had about 20 people meeting in it on a Sunday. And the DS was saying, you know, we've got this building basically sitting empty 6 days, 6.5 days a week. What could we do with this building? Well, I had begun to have some experience of Hispanic ministry and the needs of the Hispanic people that are living among us. And I said, what if we started an Hispanic service? And he said, well, I don't think we have an Hispanic population in this city. I said, oh, okay. Well, I'm from the next town over. Perhaps you're right. Kim had come with me and was shopping while I was at this meeting. I met her. We went to supper that night. There were two gentlemen bussing the table at which we were seated before we sat down, both speaking Spanish. I heard them talking Spanish to the kitchen staff at the back of the restaurant as they disappeared from our table. When we left the restaurant, have you ever had this experience when you're going to your car in a parking lot and there's someone at the car on this side of you and at the car on this, and they're having a conversation over the top of your car, and you just kind of want to, excuse me, I've got, you know, and they're talking in Spanish. So evidently that evening, in about 90 minutes, I saw the entire Hispanic population of the city of Ashland. I know they're there. You know they're there. And I suspect that the district superintendent who told me that he probably knew they were, but we learned to turn a blind eye somehow or other. And the first miracle in this story is that Jesus' disciples, fresh back from their mission journey out into the countryside, get to looking around and say, hey, wait a minute, these people are going to be hungry. And then Jesus says something that kind of makes my toes curl up. Well, then feed them. See, there's this thing that happens as we begin to be disciples of Jesus. Not only do we begin to see need around us, but that need almost immediately becomes a call. You know, you can turn on the news and find examples of people who are pointing out need to us all the time. They will give you statistics on the drug problem, the infant mortality problem, the problem of hunger, the flooding in foreign countries, the hurricanes that have hit along the Gulf. They'll tell us all about the need. But for followers of Jesus, that next thing happens, doesn't it? We hear a voice saying, you feed them. If you've got one of those Bibles that interrupts the text every now and then to put an italicized title above the paragraph you're getting ready to read to let you know what it's going to be about, in almost every English Bible I've seen, the italicized text above this one will be Jesus feeds the 5,000. Well, I'm sorry, but he didn't. He was essential to the effort. But his commandment was, you feed them, and that's what happened. That's the story. You feed them. It becomes our call when our eyes are open to the needs around us to recognize that we need to do something. And the only real defense we have against that call is the one that the disciples dredge up in the moment, on the spot. Quick thinkers they were. We don't have enough. I don't remember the numbers now. You've seen them too. How many billions of dollars worth of damage were done in Houston, Puerto Rico. An entire nation state wiped off the map in the Caribbean. It's like looking out that window in Colón and discovering that the entire vista is absorbed by one massive thing that is too big for you to even get your mind around. We know there's a need, and we know in our gut that we don't have enough. And Jesus seems to have an answer for everything. What do we have? Tell me what you do have. He turns this question over for us, doesn't he? Because we are prone as human beings to think about the deficiencies in the situation. He says, no, let's start with the blessings. Let's start with what we do have. Let's start with what is available to it. Don't tell me what you don't have. Tell me what you do have that we can begin to apply to this problem that you've identified and that it has now become your call. What do you have? They do a quick inventory and they come up with 2 fishes and 5 loaves. Now what happens next? As we say, the rest of the story is actually open to some interpretation. We know that the people are fed and satisfied. That's what the text tells us. But exactly how that miracle occurs, you'll find commentaries and scholars on at least 2 sides of this. What some of them will say is kind of paramount to the old joke about the preacher who came to his congregation. He said, I have good news and bad news. The good news is we have all the money we need to build the new fellowship hall you guys have been asking for. And they applauded. He said, the bad news is it's still in your pockets. Right? But there's a strand of scholarship that says what really happened there was this. When that little boy, he's in John's gospel, but we know he's there, though he wasn't mentioned in Mark's gospel. When that gift is given, that very simple, humble gift, when he lays all that he has out there and they begin to share it among the others are going, oh, well, I had a little bit I had put back, but I wasn't going to show anybody I had any food because it's not enough. And before you know it, as the baskets get passed along, people are taking what they need and passing their leftovers. And at the end of the day, it turns out they had way more than they thought they had. See? It's a miracle of generosity. It's a beautiful story if you stop and think about it. It's still a miracle in my heart. And sometimes I think that is the answer. Sometimes the answer to the question is, what do you have? When you honestly take stock, when you honestly look at the size of the problem and the resources that we have available, you go, you know, we can do that. There is enough. If we would all just let the miracle of generosity happen in our hearts and take the resources out and respond to the call that God has placed. Sometimes that is the answer. Sometimes it's already there in the room. And we just either haven't done the math yet or don't want to. Sometimes that's the answer. But if you're like me, you grew up with the other strand of scholarship, which said, oh no, 5 loaves, 2 fishes, clearly not enough. Jesus did a miracle and he multiplied it. And we love that story, don't we? We love the power in the hands of Jesus. I think we like it for a variety of reasons. I know that sometimes 2 fish and 5 loaves is not enough. I know that sometimes the answer is, we can't do it, and I need to know that he can. I need to know that there is a God whose riches are greater than mine, whose power is greater than mine, whose reach is longer than mine. I need to know that. But it also kind of, you know, when it becomes the story where Jesus feeds the 5,000, guess who gets to go home without a worry? Oh, God, you've got this. Bye. I'm going home. There's a football game on this afternoon. I'll be back with you next week. Maybe it's not either or. Maybe the real message in this story is it's both and. Maybe the answer is in the narrative. Lord, there's a need. I see it. Well, what are you going to do about it? I don't have enough. Well, what do you have? Bring it to me and let me bless it. And let's see what happens next. Maybe the answer is our gift plus God's blessing is enough. Could Jesus have fed 5,000 with 4 loaves and 2 fishes? Did he need both fishes? Could he have started with no fishes and just 1 loaf? How much is enough? And I think I know the answer to that question. And believe me, I don't like it any better than you do. But I think the answer to how much isn't enough is, what have you got? In 1996, I was thinking about this yesterday because I've got a ball cap that I got from the 96 Olympics, which were down in Atlanta. And I reached up and grabbed it to put on to do some yard work yesterday. And my grandpa passed away during the 96 Olympics in Atlanta. He was living in Atlanta with my parents at the time. Earlier that year, he had had extensive colon surgery against the cancer that eventually won. He was in surgery, and I was there with my parents, my sister. By this time, I'm already into my career as a pastor, and I'm supposed to be the one there that has the answers to all the hard questions that are cropping up in that moment. While my grandpa is on the operating table, and everybody is on pins and needles, and they know, oh, this is bad, this is really bad. And my parents looked at me, and my sister looked at me, and nobody ever said, you're the preacher, what do we do? But I felt the burden nevertheless. And at some point, I just needed to get out of that little waiting room, and I got up and I started walking, and I wound up in the hospital gift shop down on the first floor. I thought, maybe I need a magazine, maybe I need some crossword puzzles, and so I'm at the magazine rack looking around. And I finally picked up something, I don't remember what, that might take my mind off of things till we waited to hear from the doctor. And I go up to the counter to pay for it, but there's a little girl who has entered in the meantime, and she has grabbed something off of one of the shelves, and she's taken it over to the counter too. The problem is the counter is up here, the little girl's down here. And so she's between me and the cashier looks at me and says, can I help you? And I said, well, there's another customer here. And I point down, and the cashier, oh, I'm sorry, dear, I didn't see you, she said. Little girl takes this little plaque and sets it up on the counter, said, how much is this? And the cashier turns it over, and she says, well, it's $12.99. The little girl says, I'm going to get it for my mommy. Daddy says, mommy's really sick, we don't know when she's going to come home. Daddy says, mommy might not come home. I want to get this for her, she said. And she had a little pink plastic purse. I can still see it. Just like she's standing here. And she took that purse and she opened it up and she dumped it out on the countertop. And everything spilled out and was rolling around. I saw what came out. She had like, I don't know, 3/4, 2 dimes, a penny, and a gum wrapper. The cashier counted it like this. 1, 2, 3, 12, 99. And she opened her drawer and she dropped it in and she shut the drawer and bagged up the little girl's plaque and off she went. And I'm standing there, you know, with my magazine. Hey, does somebody need to pay for that? And she said, oh, with my employee discount. I've got it. Don't worry about it. Happens every now and then. She said, I had no idea what was going to come spilling out of that little pink purse when she upended it on the counter. But I knew whatever it was enough. One fish, four loaves, five loaves, seven loaves, 12 loaves, doesn't matter. It wouldn't have been enough. Except for the blessing of Jesus there in that moment. Our gift was His blessing. And we can do stuff. We can follow that call which He has placed before us, even though it looks too big. Oh, what fun would it be if we weren't doing miracles together? In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let God's people say.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of the Richmond, Kentucky First United Methodist Church. Growing disciples who make a difference.